Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I'm your host, Ryan Airy, and today we're talking about the Empire Magazine Spider-Man cover, where they have revealed a lot of photos that give us stills from the movies and images we have not seen before. Some of them have really cool clues as to what we're going to see in the movie. And the article itself seems to confirm a lot of things that we've already been talking about on the show. For instance, Spider-Man and the Punisher's relationship, Peter developing organic webbing, where he is at this time and place in his life. But they're also really cagey about Sadie Sink. So what we're going to do today, we're going to go over every reveal that we have in this article. And some of them are just images that I think tell us a lot about this show, about this movie, and about Daredevil Born Again. And I'm going to bring on a couple of friends, maybe three friends. We got one guy who might join us later, but he's stuck in traffic, so I'm not sure if he's going to make it or not. But I don't want to tell you who that is, so you won't be disappointed. But first, let's start bringing on our very special guest. You know him as the co-host of the Comic Book Club podcast, Mr. Alex Alban. What's going on, Alex?
Not much, Ryan. Always excited to talk about Spider-Man. Swinging into some news, webbing some news. Eight legs is the third thing that I couldn't come up with a pun for.
I'm so disappointed in you. I'm sorry. No idea. Normally, I'll you really hard. Come in, you bring the heat. And right now, everyone in the super chats, which are encouraged but not required, are going to be dissing you all day long for your very bad spider puns. So you should sit in the corner of shame. That's what I say. And of course, the guy who's, I love how you come on. You're like really nice. You do this for us all the time. And I'm like, you're a bastard. Not making me laugh. And bring it on. You know him as the guy who's always on break, Mr. Tommy Bechtold. What's up, Tommy?
Oh, Ryan, I haven't slept in days. I'm so full of doom coffee. And God, I hope Ryan Gosling gets out of traffic in time to join us as our fourth today. Oh, should I have not said that?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it is. It's Ryan Gosling. I've made an appeal to the Council of Ryans. So he said he might arrive, but we're not sure yet. Paul Ryan, not allowed to join, but not because of politics, just because his last name is Ryan. And we only take first name Ryans. And as all my fellow Ryans know, our sworn enemy, the Bryans, must be eliminated before midnight tonight. We'll give the go order. And you, oh God, I hope I didn't just incite something. Sometimes I forget the power that I have from this pulpit.
Oh no.
Like I said, Super Chats, always thankful, but we'll be hitting the live chat in just a second to see like what you guys got to say about these Spider-Man reveals. But let's, excuse me, let's stop beating around the bush here and get right into it. Let's look at some of these stills. So Empire Magazine today put out this article. They've been teasing it for about a week, revealing some stills. I will say that there's certain things that they were like not even going to take the bait on in these interviews. Like Tom Holland talked about why he came back as Spider-Man. We'll talk about that in a second. But when it came to Sadie Sink, they were basically like, nope, not happening. The article tries to, here's the exact quote. One of the biggest unresolved questions is who Sadie Sink is portraying, although there are plenty of rumors, among them that she is bringing a prominent member of the X-Men to the screen. This is where it gets interesting. No one is willing to offer confirmation and asked if audiences will recognize Sink. Feige dodges like his spider sense just tingled. If you've seen Stranger Things, you'll definitely recognize her, he says. But of course, what he means is, I know what you meant. Now, is he talking about you'll recognize Sadie Sink or you'll recognize the character that she is playing?
You think she's playing Max in Spider-Man Brand New Day? That would be huge. A crossover.
For the same universe?
Yeah. Oh, I'd love that.
I mean, that would make sense because we only see Stranger Things in the 80s when there weren't active superheroes. So it explained why nobody was like, did you see what Iron Man did the other day? But there is one problem with that. It's a small problem. There's a scene in Stranger Things episode 1 where they're racing bikes and one of them says, if I beat you, I get your copy of X-Men. I think it's 137, which is part of the Dark Phoenix saga. So that means that if the Marvel characters do exist in the Stranger Things universe, eventually that the X-Men exist in comic book form, which is...
Well,
we don't know
how they're going to do X-Men, right? So maybe they actually are in a comic book and come out Cool World style into the real world.
Could be. But you know, also, like, Marvel comics exist in the Marvel universe because there are writers and artists who, like, portray their fictional, like, their real-life adventures. So Stan and Jack Kirby were also in the Fantastic Four comics, and there was an issue where, like, Doctor Doom showed up in the office and was mad about how they were portraying him and stuff like that.
And Captain America actually worked briefly as a comic book artist for Marvel in the Marvel comics, which is one of the weirdest things that's ever happened.
And drawing Captain America too, if I remember right, which is hilarious because he had a secret identity. So right. Nobody was looking at this like incredibly buff, square-jawed guy who was great at drawing Captain America and had all these insights into his adventures and never thought, are you Captain America? It's like Peter Parker taking pictures of Spider-Man. I know Spider-Man. I worked out a deal with him. My thing, though, with the Sadie Sink deal here is if Feige's referencing Stranger Things, and if then you'll know who she is. Okay, so that issue of X-Men I just mentioned, 137, I think it is. Correct me if I'm in the chat if I'm not. So that's when the Jean Grey is, she's been overtaken by Mastermind. He's like dipped into her worst impulses. When she starts to really break out as the Dark Phoenix and to get revenge on Mastermind, I wish I had a still of this. So if you're listening on our podcast platforms, you're not missing anything. She uses her psychokinetic powers to pin him against the wall. And then at the end of Stranger Things season one, when Eleven does the same thing to the Demogorgon, it's the exact same panel. Like the two match up, like the Duffer Brothers framed it exactly, which is why I think Feige very low key might have confirmed that she's Jean Grey.
Oh,
I wasn't willing to buy what you were saying at the beginning, just because I do think he is talking about like, oh, you've seen Sadie Sink before, and he's being like a little cute about it. But I also think you might be right. There are, I'm forgetting all of them, but there are X-Men references all over Stranger Things, not least of which the D&D club being called the Hellfire Club, which is straight out of X-Men as well. So yeah, he might be like straddling the line there a little bit and being like, I'm joking about, yes, of course you know who Sadie Sink is, you saw her in Stranger Things, but also ...
Yeah, I guess the exact quote is asked if the audiences will recognize Sink. He's like, oh, yeah. I mean, if you've seen Stranger Things, you'll recognize her. So he could be talking about Sink, or he could be playing double entendre and getting us to guess the character. I don't know. It is, to me, I keep going back to one thing. Because I think we've done a really good job coming up with possibilities of who she could be playing. Shothra, number one, of course. Black Cat, long shot. And then there's people like Typhoid Mary. But honestly, why keep any of those secret? And unless the only other person I can think that would be worthy of being that secretive is if Sadie Sink is playing Mayday Parker or somebody from Toby's daughter from another universe or something like that, which could be, you know, could also explain why she knows who Peter Parker is.
Yeah. I was thinking about that a little bit after the press started coming out from Empire. And I agree with you. I also think I'm not quite sure why they would be keeping Jean Grey secret. Like, how does that play out in the movie? Is that a surprise at the end of the movie, similar to the Michelle Jones thing where she's like, please call me Jean Grey, and we're supposed to have that mic drop when most of the audience at this point probably knows that that's coming from having read about it online extensively. I do think if you're keeping interior to the movie, having her be something like Mayday Parker or potentially, and I kind of hope they don't do this, but like an alternate universe Mary Jane. She's actually Mary Jane because of the red hair. Like that's something to me that would be more, make sense in a Spider-Man movie, be something that they want to keep secret because it really does something to Spider-Man. If she's like, please call me Jean Grey, Tom Holland Spider-Man has no relationship to that, you know? So I long story short, I don't know how it plays out of the movie is my question here. And I guess we'll find out in a couple of
weeks. And also, who is this for? You know, like, is this for people who remember Jean Grey fondly from, like, for us, it's great. For casual fans who, you know, kind of remember the original X-Men movies and, oh, yeah, the girl from Game of Thrones, she was in that. I didn't see that last one where she turned into a big burning bird. What happened in that? It might be confusing for people. But there are some things in this. I didn't even plan on talking about Sadie Sink. That was just a tangent. There are some really cool things in this, though, I do want to bring up. So one of the new stills, we're going to go over some new and old ones because there's some additional context. So this is a new one. This is really interesting. So we've talked here about the cover on the left, which shows Spider-Man in his new suit, which looks awesome, web-slinging away. And a woman, you can barely see her in this still, but she's, you know, wearing the hand garb and she's chasing him. I made the point that she could be Mariko Yoshida, who's part, you know, whose family's attached to the Yakuza. Alex, if I remember right, you didn't like that theory. unless I'm
I was all right with it. I was okay with that theory. But okay. I don't know if we're going to get like a lot more X-Men. I'm very dubious about the X-Men references in a Spider-Man movie, but I could be totally wrong.
Well, again, I mean, we've brought this up before, but the whole transformation storyline that we'll talk about in a second is taken, like it's in the cartoon, where when Spider-Man starts to transform, he goes to see the X-Men. So if Destin Daniel Cretton was like, hey, maybe we can put some X-Men characters in this. And he was already using that for reference. It could be a natural fit. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting here in this still is that Spider-Man has a, I've never known how to pronounce this, Shuriken, the ninja star?
Shuriken?
Shuriken. He has a shuriken, a.k.a. Yeah, exactly. A.k.a. The first extended weapon you get or extra weapon you get in the original Ninja Turtles video game. And he's got one of these in his shoulder. And it looks like he is surprised. He's kind of reaching up. So this seems kind of innocuous at first, but really think about what this means. He's fighting ninjas in a prison cell like we've talked about here before, in a prison cell where, you know, Daredevil was presumably going to be and have his cameo. But how did that ninja star, Shuriken, get past his spider sense, which was pretty well developed in the last couple movies? You guys have any theories on that before I throw any out?
Well, I mean, I guess there could be a telepathic mutant nearby that's blocking his ability to sense things, but that would be ridiculous, right? We have no idea if that's coming. But that would be my theory.
It could also be that, you know, because the movie's about transformation. Actually, one of the things Tom Holland said is that this was the first Spider-Man movie where he was allowed to actually go into the writer's room and pitch. Basically, he has a lot of power at Sony now. He's their golden boy. And he actually was throwing out lines. And one of the things he said was like, what if it's spider puberty? And he said they shut him down, but the kernel of the idea stayed in the movie, this development, which we don't have to get into organic webs and what that's a metaphor for. But looking at this, if he's going through spider puberty and it's messing with his abilities and his spider sense, that I think is a reason that this could have broken through. So do you guys think that this battle with the hand is going to be inconsequential and just part of the opening montage, or do you think it's a more central part of the story?
I would bet it comes somewhere either in like the first act or towards the middle of the movie. I still don't know if necessarily the hand is the major villain of the movie necessarily, but I like your theory a lot, Ryan, that there is his powers going out of whack, not working consistently more than anything, that his spider sense is going in and out. Maybe he's getting more strength and then getting less strength. He doesn't know what's going on with his body, as we all did through puberty. And yeah, that's messing with things. I think that makes a lot of sense.
It is interesting how... I'm sorry. It's interesting how much the hand has been promoted in this movie already. Like, that's obviously something they feel safe about the audience knowing, being well aware that the hand is appearing in this, because I think every piece of promotional material that's come out has had them featured at some point in it. And that is, so it's definitely something that you can look at it two ways. One, it's important to the movie, or two, it's something that they don't care that it's going to be mostly, their involvement's mostly spoiled by the time the movie comes out. So it's like not that super consequential to the climax of the film.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how much 5D chess you want to do with Sony, because they have a bad habit of always putting the last shot of every Spider-Man movie in the trailer.
Yes,
the
true.
So really it would be particularly hilarious if it's like, nope, it ends with the head. That's the final scene of the movie.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, the trailer was him fighting the Rhino, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Which is literally the last shot of the movie. Yeah. I mean, really, that would be kind of hilarious, especially if Daredevil's there and we cut away to Matt Murdock going, and then that's it. Like, wait, what the hell was that? Like, that's the biggest F you to an audience since Joker Folia do. Sorry, Tommy, I were you about to say something? I cut you off.
No. I was just going to make a bad joke that he actually gets killed by that star. That's probably the most offensive thing to call that thing, but that's what I knew it in a Myrtle Beach gift shop when I was 14 years old. It was a ninja star that you could buy.
Speaking of spider puberty, let's move on. And here's the next still, right? So this is one that was released a few days ago. This is showing Peter kind of like ripping through a web. It matches the shot of him waking up in a cocoon when he's suspended above. It looks like he was crashed out. And I think this image of the cocoon that we have from the comics, that looks like Mark Bagley. And if I remember right, this is from a panel. This is just for comparison. This is from, there was a time when Spider-Man basically thought his parents came back to life, but they were androids that were created by the Chameleon, et cetera, et cetera. It's a long story. And afterwards, he kind of went off the deep end. There is no more Peter Parker. There is only the spider. And he got like more and more violent. So he like put this emotionally protective cocoon around himself. This shot in the trailer, though, where he's starting to fall and he reaches for his webbing and it's not there because he doesn't have web shooters. And then we immediately cut to like another shot of the slit. I mean, there's definitely going to be organic webbing in this, right? Like,
yeah, 100%. And I think we talked about this before here, but this seems more like the other, which is a crazy complicated storyline. But the short version is that he dies and comes back a little more spider than man. I feel like we're going to get a riff on that. I also wonder, given that he seems to be waking up in this cocoon, I don't think they're explicitly going to do this, but this reminds me very much of the original black suit storyline where the black suit manipulated him, was making him swing across the city in the middle of the night and just wake up in strange places. So just based on these stills, I would throw out there that I think we get that. He is Spider-Manning in his sleep, wakes up suddenly in a cocoon, no web shooters, no costume, nothing. He's like, what is going on with me right now?
If that happens, I wonder when he's Spider-Manning in his sleep, if he's more violent. Have either of you played the Spider-Man 2 PlayStation game?
No.
I have watched my son play it. That's my experience.
Excellent game. It is, for my money, the best the black suit story has ever been told, and that includes the original comics. Because in the original comics, it doesn't really last that long. Like, he has the suit for, I think, 9 issues, and it's only a problem in, like, one of them, where he starts to notice it doing bad stuff. But in the game, the suit not only, like, makes him feel stronger and more powerful, which makes him more aggressive, but he starts to do things, if I remember right, in his sleep when he's not paying attention, which they also did in Spider-Man 3. There's this really chilling moment when I think it's Kurt Connors is analyzing the suit and says, oh, we have to get this off of you. It's killing you. And then Spider-Man says, it's killing us. And he starts to speak in the third person, or sorry, in the plural, in the first person plural. And it's chilling to see how it's taking him over. It's more like a horror movie. And I would love, like, if they are going to go down that route, I hope they go down that route. Doesn't mean he has to transform into the man spider like we saw in the animated series, but I think that would be really interesting. Other than that, I don't know why you do organic webbing at all, unless it serves a character purpose, you know?
I feel like it has to be that. And we've seen that shot in the trailer, to get back to the hand, of him having his eyes turned to something weird, which, again, a lot of people have sort of said, ooh, it's totally the Venom symbiote. He's getting the symbiote, which I don't think they're going to do at all in this movie. Maybe a later movie at some point, but not this one. But if it does, if the spider puberty takes the place there, it could be the same thing, where maybe he's fighting the hand, he gets the shuriken in his shoulder, it's driving him nuts, and it drives him to this more animalistic place, where then he starts to lose time, wakes up in a cocoon.
Okay. Yeah, maybe this woman has some sorcery, because the hand's whole thing is about raising up a death cult. They're like into eternal life resurrection. They are a magic cult. Could be that there's something touched there, because Peter has been touched by magic. Like, the fact that this spell follows him around everywhere he goes, in a sense, like the world's been altered according to, you know, him, means he is kind of like at the center of a web or a locus point of magic, or at least they could do that. Again, I personally don't think we're going to see the hand all through the movie. I think that the reason it's in so much marketing is because they look cool and they're part of the opening montage, and Marvel probably said, oh yeah, well, we're doing the hand in Daredevil season 3, so that'd be great. I mean, then you're helping to publicize us. At least that's my hunch. I don't know for sure. Tommy, I want to go back to something you said, and I glossed right over it. I love the image of you at Myrtle Beach as a child buying one of these ninja stars.
Yes.
And like how that was the beginning of a full circle moment that led to today. The celestial stars aligned in that moment, and I wonder if that kid would have had any idea that someday he would be in front of thousands of people regaling that experience of seeing this ninja
star. What I want to be clear is, what I wanted was a taser, but what we negotiated down to, my parents and I, was below a katana. Oh, in Myrtle Beach, you can buy anything, my friend. There's no laws there. I don't think they even have a police force.
The Vegas of the East Coast. That's what they say about Myrtle Beach. All right. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I just glossed over that earlier. And the whole time we were talking, I thought, that's pretty weird about the ninja star at Myrtle Beach. What a strange detail of Tommy's life that I never knew before. All right. I want to move on. We got a little bit more Punisher stuff here, right? So there's some new stills of the Punisher that were released with Peter. This one's really interesting. So this shows Punisher doing his Punisher thing, shooting his weapon. And you can't really see it. There's another still I'll try to pull, but his skull is different. It's the same you know, skull we see, but usually even in One Last Kill, when we see the skull, it's a little bit more slapdash. Like he got some spray paint and a stencil and he made the skull really quick. Now it's a lot more official. Like it's actually like the armor on his abs is like part of the teeth. And it's a lot more like a superhero suit. And I know a lot of people have been worried that like this movie being presumably PG-13 would water Frank down. And you can see here, though, that Peter is looking at the Punisher like, oh, crap, like he's running toward him and he doesn't like what he's doing. Do you guys think we're going to see this push pull between them?
I mean, I think if I was to extrapolate some dialogue here, it's probably Spider-Man running up and being like, hey, aren't we in the Odyssey together?
Money, you should mention that because the article also does have some really cool details because John Bernthal and Peter and Tom Holland worked together before. And he was the one who was telling him like about his Spider-Man audition. He was like, yeah, you should do a flip at the end of it. You know, we're like, or do a flip at the beginning before you start doing it. Cause Tom Holland could do gymnastics. And now here they are in like back-to-back Marvel projects, which is really
John Bernthal was the movies. Original. John Bernthal was the original do a flip guy. And then Zach Cherry got the part in the movie. That's right. Crazy.
That's imagine crazy. It would have been Frank the wearing his hoodie.
You're always
do the flip. Flip red.
John Bernthal and Zach Cherry always going out for the same parts.
They are. I hate that they have to compete because they're both wonderful.
They are.
Well, and physically, though, they just match up so well, those two guys. Did they ever confirm that, what's his name again, the actor, the one from Severance you just referenced?
Zach Cherry.
Did they ever confirm is Zach Cherry's character in Homecoming is the same as his character who was live streaming on the bus in Shang-Chi?
Yeah, I think so. I think they have the same name, if I remember correctly, in the credits.
That's incredible. I would love it if I didn't know he was a named character. I thought he was literally do a flip guy. I would love it if he became like the Rick Jones of this universe. Like this guy who's basically like Rick Jones in the comics was a teen sidekick a la Snapper Carr. But I would love it if he was this guy who just kind of wove in between projects. And at the end, it's revealed he was a watcher. Or he was Dr. Doom or something like that. Like just, you know, this guy you didn't think was consequential. He milled you, if you know Foundation. He was that guy you didn't think was a big deal, but he actually was the whole time.
I think we crave that in these movies. We're always, whenever anyone is like a like incidental day player character, but they have some more substance to them in their acting career, we're like, they've got to be someone deeper than that. They've got to be Mephisto. He must be Mephisto.
They got him early, though. Yeah, but they got him so early. And that's the, oh my God, this is a whole podcast in and of itself. The amount of great actors who are in the MCU but have ridiculously small parts. Mm-hmm. Like Michael Stuhlbarg, who was in A Serious Man, plays like the other doctor in the Doctor Strange movie.
The annoying doctor in Doctor Strange,
Or, I saw Alfre Woodard talking about her part in Civil War the other day. I don't remember some interview or something.
Yeah,
she's just like in that one scene as the mom who sends Tony Stark on his journey. And what she was saying about that was Robert Downey Jr., I guess, specifically asked for her and was like, we need somebody who's a really serious actor, so this has the weight of the scene. But I actually think the funny thing apart that, it's a great scene, but like it totally upends it because you're like, that's Alfre Woodard. What's she doing in this movie? Yeah. Oh, she's not coming back? Okay.
Right. And she's already in the MCU in Luke Cage, where she played Mariah. And that scene, I always thought, because they worked together on the movie Heart and Souls, which is a great movie, very, very underrated romantic comedy from the 90s. And she was like a motherly character to Robert Downey Jr. in that, even though they're the same age, as long as it's related to the plot and stuff, because she's a ghost. So I always thought that was the reason why for that. But yeah, I mean, just the amount of great actors, like Zachary Levi is one of the Warriors Three, and they recast him in one of the movies, and you don't even notice because he's just under the makeup and he just kind of pops in.
Walton Goggins in Ant-Man and the Wasp too. Like great amazing one. Actor, great in the movie, but like that's what you use Walton Goggins for? Crazy.
It's kind of like how Ron Swanson, his real name is Nick Offerman, is in the show Deadwood.
Yes.
He's in Deadwood and he gets killed by immediately.
Deadwood is another one of those shows though where you're like you could have three lines in that show and be like a very fantastic actor and they would just
Anna Gunn starts there. Oh, I mean, I don't know if anybody watching this, if you guys just watch Marvel or into that kind of thing, but the show Deadwood, it's on HBO right now. They're not paying us.
You can check out mine and Ryan's companion podcast, Talking Wood, where we just break down Deadwood.
Exactly. Yeah, it's normally about woodworking.
Not Talking Dead. Not Talking Dead. Was that taken or
no? Not Talking Dead. Him. No, that was. I didn't.
It
even
was
think
taken
about
actually.
That.
We looked at the copyright in that. That's incredible. Right, talking to it. Yeah, and that was a really popular show for a while. Okay, let's move on to the next thing here. I think there's another little Punisher bit here. So Tom Holland did also say he would love to pop up in one of the Punisher shows. Let's see what an R-rated version of Spider-Man looks like. I'd love to repay the favor. Again, the only way I see this happening is, all right, let's just say Masters of the Universe defies all expectations, right? And it's a huge hit. And by the way, we're going to be here on Monday talking about Masters of the Universe. Let's say it's a huge hit. And Sony makes so much money off of it. It's their next billion-dollar franchise, which, of course, is also being made with Amazon. And so Sony goes, well, maybe Spider-Man's not as important to us. So they actually entertain an offer from Marvel to buy the character. Or Masters of the Universe does so well that Amazon outright buys Sony Studios. I don't think Sony would ever sell it because they make so much money on other stuff. But if that happened, the rights would revert back to Marvel. So if you want Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe permanently, go see Masters of the Universe this week.
You know what I just realized? Sony is the kid in the neighborhood that gets the Sega Genesis first. And they're obnoxious, and you don't really want to be around them, and they kind of suck in every single way, but they got the Sega Genesis, in this case, Spider-Man, so you have to include them in your social life. And now we're all stuck going over to this kid's house to play our Sega Genesis every 3 years, and it just... It's time for us all to get our own Sega Genesis.
I talked about this earlier last week. The Spider-Noir is the best. I mean, apart from the Spider-Verse films, that is Sony really rolling with these characters for $400 million, which is nuts. Apparently, they shot it only for black and white and not in color, so they had to reshoot the whole damn thing because they were like, we can't just put this out in black and white. But we'll talk about that maybe tomorrow or next week as well. I know, that's a little teaser for the podcast and what's to come. Let's talk Bruce Banner. So My Time to Shine, hello, not the leaker, not normally my go-to leaker. I did put out some cryptic tweets yesterday about the Hulk and Brand New Day. One of them seemed to say that Gray Hulk is our doorway back to Savage Hulk. Gray Hulk is actually Joe Fixit in the comics. So I do think we see here real quick. We've talked about this before, like the idea of Banner appearance. And one thing we have had in the past few days, if I can find this image, is confirmation that Savage Hulk is back. We kind of already knew it from various, it's not that one, it's this one. We kind of already knew it from various toy leaks, but here we actually got promo art. It's a poster showing Spider-Man facing off against the Hulk. I think that's from China. And we've talked before about how when in the comics, everybody's memories of Spider-Man were erased, the Hulk remembered. Mm-hmm. The axe forgets, but the Hulk remembers. What do you guys think? Do you think that I'm just reading this real quick. So what we see here in this still and in the trailer is that Bruce is wearing the inhibitor that we saw in She-Hulk. And this other bit of tidbit from the Chinese synopsis of the film, which is different from the American one, is really highlighting that the inhibitor is keeping the Savage Hulk in check. Right. And that's drawing a parallel between now Bruce has to suffer through a transformation and Peter has to suffer through a transformation. Do you think this movie actually takes the time to be like, here's the Gray Hulk and he's different? Or do you think they just go full Savage Hulk?
I think just full Savage Hulk. I mean, I'll say I love Joe Fixit. For anybody, I guess, who's listening instead of watching, like he has a fedora, he's got Tommy guns. This is from a great storyline, if I remember correctly, that Peter David wrote back in the day where he was a bouncer in Las Vegas. I don't remember whether he lost his memory or was just pretending to lose his memory so everybody would leave him alone. It was one of the two. But whatever it is, it's great. Like, those are great comics that everybody should read. They're not going to have in the middle of this movie a Hulk with Tommy guns being like, I'm going to kill you, Spider-Man. See?
Damn.
You know, I mean, as popular as Spider-Noir is, it's just not going to happen. But I do think him going full monster is 100% something we'll see in this movie because it should give a contrast if what we think is going to happen happens, that Spider-Man is wrestling with this monstrous side. He can see what happens when like the really locked up Bruce Banner is suddenly forced to let all of his monstrous impulses go.
Man, I am really craving a scene now where Savage Hulk or Hulk, like just fully hulked out Bruce Banner calls him Parker when he's in the Spider-Man suit, because like somehow he does.
Oh man, like, yeah.
And that somehow make it like gives Peter Parker pause, and it like even though he's in imminent danger, he doesn't want to leave the Hulk because the Hulk's the only person who knows the truth about him. I love that. Yeah,
they've never met, so it would take some finagling. But yeah, I also think that would be great.
I also like that Peter Parker goes to a state school. That makes me feel a kindred spirit to him. I'm happy about that. He's wearing an ESU hoodie in that shot, in that still photo.
Yeah. Yeah. Empire State University, which I think is the stand-in for NYU, but
is that a state school? Columbia. Columbia, actually.
Columbia.
Never which Columbia is not a state school by any stretch of the imagination. But
well, go ahead.
Oh, no. That was my last point. Sorry.
Spider-Man games, though, I will say that ESU is located where NYU is. If we want to take the games as canon, go ahead.
Usually it's uptown, and usually it looks a little more like Columbia, but that's my New Yorker coming out, so whatever. I was just going to add that's some really good swag. If they want to send me an ESU hoodie, I will wear that. That looks great.
Hey, we'll make them. Don't worry. We'll make them for our merch store, which reminds me, we do have some hot new drops coming out on the merch store this month. None of them are out right now. We got a couple Masters of the Universe shirts they're going to be dropping tomorrow. We've got a lot of stuff planned for House of the Dragon, for Supergirl. And of course, we always have new Star Wars merch and other things coming out. We still have lots of merch from the boys and Star Wars in our merch store. We have the Boba Fett shirt, which is one of my favorites, showing a redneck Boba Fett. We've got the boys, Dawn of the Seven. We've got Girls Get It Done. We've got Tosche Station Power Converter sale and classic old favorites like Darth Master Vulcan, combining Back to the Future with Star Wars, and the super sweet Japanese-inspired Darth Maul shirt. You can find those and many more at our merch store. Links are below. So there's a couple other stills I want to address here. One really quick that I just think is really cool. They put this out. It's an image of Spider-Man holding something up like something's going to crush him, which, if you're a fan of the movies, calls back to the great scene in Spider-Man Homecoming where he's in his pajamas and he has to lift up all this wreckage in order to stop the Vulture, which of course is inspired by one of the most famous Spider-Man panels of all time. I don't remember the issue, but when Peter's still kind of new to the game and he's able to lift all this wreckage in a giant splash panel, which I think was done by Steve Ditko. Does that sound right, Alex?
That does. I always forget. I always want to say it's John Buscema, but I don't. I think you're right about Steve Ditko.
But it's an absolutely great still. And before we get into talking about Damage Control and Bruce Banner and the X-Men, I also just want to bring this up real quick. So this is a cool still of Spider-Man working with MJ. Now, in the Empire article, they talked about their relationship, how MJ's kind of like, okay, this guy's sort of awkward toward Peter, and we see this in the trailer. Peter is, re-meets Ned, I should say, Ned's like, okay, this guy's kind of strange. Why is he so into my Spider-Man tracker? Because Ned, maybe subconsciously, is obsessed with Spider-Man, which could also be because he's got a touch of the magic in him. He's got that gift. So maybe part of him resisted the spell, which makes you think, did Wong also resist the spell? But here we have MJ actually working with Spider-Man. He's at a desk. He's looking at components. There's a pair of binoculars that have a wire running from them into a computer. This to me is really interesting because we've not had any of this in the trailers. All we've had is Peter reading his note to MJ. They've released the whole note online. We've seen him on a personal level with them, but the idea that Spider-Man is now working with MJ or Ned is really interesting. Do you guys have any theories on why they would come together? Like what could possibly bring them into his orbit?
Well, they've graduated from MIT at this point, right? Like in the continuity, because we've jumped forward 4-ish years or so.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know how his technical expertise is, but he could be dumbing it down a little bit just so he can spend time with her and be like, oh, I really need your help with this tech.
Oh my God. That's so lame. What a nerdy thing to do. What a kind of player, but that's also just sad. Hey, are you smart with technical things? Because my gloves and my fingers can't type on this keyboard very well. Could you help me?
Well, you know, I think, you know, what we know about the characters of MJ and Ned are that they are still heroic with or without Peter Parker. They have the, they are characters that want to make the world a better place. So perhaps with this absence that they don't understand of this person that was so pivotal to their lives that is no longer even on their radar, they're still called to, like, fight crime in some way or like do their part, whether that's like, you know, creating technology or being citizen bloggers. I have no idea. And I think that both things can be true. I think like perhaps they, you know, Peter might not need them as much as he's, you know, wants to be around them, but they might also have some utility to him, as whatever they learned at MIT might be functional in helping him, you know, without having friends to sit, to be the guy in the chair or the girl in the chair. True. He can at least have these people in a professional capacity. And of course, you know, deep down inside, he's longing for them to be his friend and girlfriend again. So I think it might be a combination of the two.
Here's a couple of thoughts. Ned, we know, is developing the spider tracker. Maybe it could be like the spider tracers in the comics where he attunes them to his spider sense, but they weren't originally. Originally, it was tech that he had, and then later on they changed it to a spider sense. Maybe he's got all these villains in the movie. Like, for instance, they released this incredibly kick-ass still of the Scorpion, holding up a damage control soldier, which we'll talk about in a second. So he's got all these villains. Maybe he needs help tracking them down. And maybe MJ graduated with a degree in cellular biology. You know, he's gone to Bruce Banner. I don't know how much help he is or how much he trusts him, but he would trust MJ to help him with his transformation problems.
Or what if in college, Ned was red-pilled by J. Jonah Jameson and the podcasters and now hates Spider-Man, and MJ, you know, has the normal college experience where she becomes empathetic to the world and its problems and has decided that she must help Spider-Man. And now they're working on a way to convince Ned that Spider-Man is good.
Honestly, dude, great theory. I would love that. I 100% think that would be great. That's such a Spider-Man thing to happen. That's like Aunt May not liking Spider-Man. Right. Or my favorite thing about Spider-Man in the MCU is that he accidentally dated the Vulture's daughter. Like, that to me is still like one of the most Spider-Man things of all time that happened. Mm-hmm. I would love it. I think that would be great. It also goes like, hell, I don't think Spider-Man ever had a girlfriend besides MJ who actually likes Spider-Man.
Not to go in another direction, and I have no specific end point here. I'm probably connecting like A and B and making Q, but with him working with MJ on some sort of tech thing, there's one or two shots in the trailer that I don't think have ever been, at least for me, properly explained, which is that room with the TVs and stuff that I think we see Spider-Man in. And we also see what presumably is Sadie Sink in doing, like the Magneto lifting up hands. Mm-hmm. So what is that? Like, maybe there is some sort of tech thing beyond the Scorpion that they need to track down or figure out. Maybe she's a mad bobber like the Riddler and the Batman or something like that. I don't know. Again, like, I don't have an endpoint there, but it feels like if they're working on tech and there is some tech already in play, that may have some sort of collusion there, potentially.
You know, we do see in the trailer a bit of mind control, like a persona that's shifting from person to person, like the Shadow King, right? And we presume that's Sadie Sink, Jean Grey, whatever. Could also be that Ned is helping to track that down. Like, there's some kind of energy signature when they change, so they're going after that person. That could also relate to that room of TVs too.
Yeah, let me throw out a terrible possibility to you. What if Sadie Sink's character is secretly controlling MJ to get Spider-Man to build her something that she needs? And so we eventually get, he's like, oh, she's spending time with me. This is so wonderful. But then there's a turn there and it's not actually her at all. And she doesn't know Spider-Man.
Brutal. Yeah. Brutal. I would love that. Again, like, use this premise, like, create all the dramatic tension and twists and turns, because presumably they'll have their memories back by the end of this movie. So I hope that while they still have this, that they milk it for everything they can. So a couple other things here that I want to get into before we address the super chats. Sorry, we're a little late on the super chats today. We also got this great still of Trammell Tillman's character. We know he is a director of damage control, a minor character from the X-Men comics who's very anti-mutant. And he's shaking hands with Spider-Man, who we know also got the key to the city. We see a scene where he's talking to Spider-Man in the trailer. So it seems like they work together. I don't know if Spider-Man is fully deputized, but damage control we've seen in the past of the MCU, they're very much like not cleaning up after battles anymore. They're just cleaning up superheroes. We saw this in Wonder Man and Ms. Marvel and all these other things. And as I've said on the channel, I think that they're going to be involved in this Hulk battle. And they're going to recover Bruce Banner's inhibitor tech. And the theory that, you know, is, we've made a video on it. I didn't come up with it. I credited the original source in the video, that they make the mutant control collars from it, that we see all throughout the X-Men. So I don't know. Like, to me, damage control are the most interesting part of this movie. The fact that there's this government agency that has kind of wormed its way through different things. And I'm curious how they react to Spider-Man, because it informs like how society is going to react to Spider-Man. What do you guys think about this? And why do you think that we see this great still of them trying to pull in the Scorpion?
I mean, I think if we're following the threads from Wonder Man and it is Destin Daniel Cretton, I don't think Damage Control is exactly villains per se, but they are clearly bean counters. They don't really care who they throw in prison. They just got to meet their quota. That's what they got to do. So that scene there of Trammell Tillman shaking Spider-Man's hand looks a little bit like that street chase that we've seen a bunch of with tanks that the Punisher is in as well. So this is probably the end of that, being like, thanks so much, Spider-Man, for taking down these guys. We'll take it from here. But I could definitely see them becoming more and more, not on the side of evil, but antagonists for Spider-Man over the course of the movie, until ultimately they're like, we got to capture Spider-Man as well and throw him in jail because he's out of control.
It wouldn't surprise me if that tank, if that chase was very early in the movie too. That seems like the kind of thing that we do the montage, we do the reintroduction, and then we get this chase to kind of bring us into modern day. You introduce the Punisher, who doesn't have Sadie Sink with him in the scene, you know, but it sets her up for later. So this kind of like would set the stakes. And like you said, it's a great way for to introduce Trammell Tillman as this nice, helpful man from the government who's here to help, which then of course would turn. Tommy, got any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering if Spider-Man apprehends Scorpion and Frank Castle, and then Frank Castle meets Sadie Sink's character in prison. Like, she's already been captured by Damage Control, and they break out together, or all three of them break out together, which would be crazy, but like realizing that they need each other to get out of there.
Well, we don't know for sure that it was her, but somebody was mind controlling the person inside the tank, if I remember right. Wasn't it like an old lady inside the tank who was in the trailer that we see? And then they're like, who the hell? And then you see like her change and this guard, like the camera work implies that the mind that was inside of this person in the tank goes away. So that, you know, that could be her trying to escape, to your point.
I love the idea of all three of them breaking out together. Now I'm picturing Scorpion, Punisher, and Sadie Sink's character in like an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Which ties back by energy to the colors. Odyssey. That's based on the Odyssey. So there you go. Right. It all fits.
Full circle moment. And that's a great way to start talking about our super chats, where Dave Whiston gave us $5 before we even started and said, roll it on with the show. Kent Densmore is now a channel member. Thank you for being a favorite customer. As a reminder, the $5 tier for the memberships, you get a 15% merch store discount site-wide. I will say that we had about half the new members drop after a month, which tells me a lot of you guys used that merch store discount and then didn't renew, which honestly, I respect the game. They might make me create a revolving merch discount like that comes up every month, but if you want to join, that's great. It supports the channel. We always appreciate it. We have new perks we're rolling out all the time. Mike Gams gave us $2 and said, Tommy Bechtel was great as Megawatt in Spider-Noir. Tommy, I bet you could do that voice, that like deep film noir villain guy voice. You'd be great at that.
I'll have to work on it for next season.
I'm not asking you to break it out now. I'm just saying you're a great actor.
Well, Megawatt is played by Andrew Caldwell, who I knew very well back in Los Angeles. We used to be like Zach Cherry and John Barenthal auditioning for the same roles all the time.
Yeah, I bet Cherry and Barenthal hate each other, man, because they're constantly trying to one-up each other. Ric Flair's Hairs gave us $2 and said, loving the live streams. Thanks, y'all. Thank you for that great name, Ric Flair's Hairs. The Staz 2049 gave us $2, has a great theory. What if Sadie Sink is a Cassandra Nova variant? Again, I kind of feel like the only reason to hide her is if she's a variant, you know? In the comics, Charles Xavier was a ginger. In the MCU, he's got brown hair. Oh, wait, no, he wasn't a ginger. I'm sorry, he was blonde when he was a kid. Kane Marco was the ginger. But other than that, could be, it's probably too complicated, but do you guys think there's any value in that?
I mean, I love Cassandra Nova as a character. I'm just trying to wrap my head around what that would mean. I think as much as I don't love it, the call me Jean Grey thing is almost definitely going to happen at the end of the movie. And like we were talking about earlier, it'll mean something to the people it means something to, and it will not mean anything to anybody else. It'll be the same as after Avengers when all of my non-comic book friends were like, who's that purple guy? What's going on there?
right.
Yes. You know,
wait, what was he going to say after Avengers? Why did it cut off? I can definitely see a scene like you're talking about where Peter at the end goes, wait a minute, I didn't catch your name. And she turns to the camera, smiles and says, it's Jean Grey. Oh, wait, no, that's the end of Rise of Skywalker. I'm really sorry. No. That's what I was thinking of. Q-Man WPG gave us $5 Canadian and said, plot twist, it absolutely won't happen. Sadie Sink is playing young Madam Web.
Mm.
Why are they keeping it a secret? I don't know. It could be anything. She could be Julia Carpenter for all I know. Although I think if they want to keep Julia Carpenter in, they would keep Sydney Sweeney in the role if they can.
If it's connecting to any of the other Sony movies, I would want to hide that fact as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True. God, imagine they did that. Imagine they like hid in the opening montage. They put Aaron Taylor Johnson's Kraven in it just to kind of legitimize everything else they were doing.
It would be very Sony of them, would it not? Would it not? If they were like, we actually are using this character that has been speculated to be this other huge Marvel character for this whole time. But psych, it's back to the Sony-verse. Congratulations,
it does
everyone.
Have something to do with Spider-Man, I think. End of mystery. Claire JS gave us $5 and said, what do you guys think about Tom saying he'd like to be in a Punisher show to see what an R-rated Spidey would look like? Well, we talked about this a second ago, but not for very long. What do you guys think we would see with an R-rated? Would an R-rated Spider-Man even work? I cannot imagine the character saying the F word.
Have you ever read a comic book called Spider-Man Reign by Kare Andrews? Have you ever heard of this?
This is
basically The Dark Knight, but for Spider-Man, like almost one-to-one. It's set at a post-apocalyptic future. It's an aging Spider-Man who hasn't been Spider-Man for years. And you get to see, at one point, Peter Parker's schlong hanging out, just like sitting on the bed, totally nude, full frontal Spider-Man in this book. They reveal, to spoil the end of it, Mary Jane is haunting him as a ghost the entire time. Mm. He is radioactive, and when they were intimate, that did certain things that gave her cancer, and she died. And that's a major plot point in there. The Punisher's not in it, so that doesn't tie in. But if you wanted R-rated Spider-Man, check that out. I will say Kare Andrews' art of that book.
This is a Marvel comic, and not like some web comic you see ads for on
that I made.
Sites.
It's on my Tumblr. I made it on my Tumblr. it's a real Marvel comic. They even did a sequel, which the sequel is utter nonsense. Like, do not read that. But Spider-Man Raiden, there's some stuff that actually like kind of works in it. To get back to the original question, I feel like if you put Spider-Man in like Spider-Man One Last Kill or something like that, it is functionally no different from Punisher being in Spider-Man brand today. Like, you're not gonna do anything really different with Spider-Man. You're just gonna have the ability to have Punisher actually kill people and actually curse on the show. Sure. So it frees him up, but you don't want to have like an R-rated Spider-Man. Well, you don't want
to. And he would be trying to stop him the whole time too. Go ahead, Tom.
Exactly.
I was gonna say, there's a scene in Spider-Man Noir, I think episode 2 or 3, where the spider uses his webs to pull a henchman in front of a hail of bullets. So the guy gets riddled with bullets. And I was like, that is what this would be, right? It would be Punisher killing people and the Spider-Man setting them up for the killer. Like, you know, and I think we would maybe hear the Spider-Man, like I'm J. Jonah Jameson. We would hear Spider-Man say like the F word for the first time when he accidentally murders someone that he's just trying to incapacitate. Like, they think that would be
with great power comes great oaf.
Got it. With great power, I don't know why I froze up there. I was trying to like fill in the word. I was like, wait, where would the F word go in that sentence?
What's the rest of that word after the F?
He is from New York. He's from Queens. Like, with great fucking power comes great fucking responsibility. I don't know what the fuck you want me to say right now. Like, I'm just trying to do my fucking thing out here, right? Like, by the way, and Peter did say the F word at the end of Far From Home. They just cut it off. So we do kind of have a tease of an R-rated Spider-Man. We've got Cup of Pablo gave us $5 and said that mention of Heart and Souls just took me back hard. Hey man, did you guys ever do this when you would rent a movie? Sometimes I'd rent a movie and would just lock in and I'd watch it over and over and over the weekend. For me, that was Heart and Souls and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I don't know why those merited my focus. Can you guys name one from your past? Because that was me and Heart and Souls.
First one I thought of was Pulp Fiction, which my uncle got a screener of, so I got it early and I was just like completely enamored and watched it probably 3 or 4 times in a row in one weekend.
Nice.
Mine was definitely Billy Madison, for sure. I rented Billy Madison and I did not stop watching it until the 48-hour window was up and we had to give it back. And I think if I'm going way back, there's a movie called Little Monsters with Howie Mandel and a very young and Fred Savage.
That
both me and my brother really locked into and wore that tape out as well.
You know the funny thing
about
Little
Monsters? Did that inspire you to feed? Go ahead, Alex. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say with Little Monsters, I wasn't locked in with the movie. I was locked in with the novelization of the movie, which I don't know why, but I had never seen the movie. Like, I got the book and I read it 5 times in a row. Like, I just kept reading that book for some reason. It was crazy.
Powerful storytelling.
Beautiful.
Movies used to have several points of revenue because they would do the movie, they would do the video game, they would do the novelization, they do the soundtrack, and now it's just straight to streaming. You know, they've lost all that. Tommy, I was going to say, did you ever, like in the movie Little Monsters, were you ever inspired to feed piss to a bully? Because there's this whole thing where they piss into the bully's apple juice.
Yeah. It's piss. So
he doesn't know what it is. It's piss. And he only realized it when he tasted it. Like he didn't actually, when it came close to his mouth. Anyways, Cup of Pablo also said, Sadie Sink is clearly playing your mom. Good one. And we've got two here from, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name, Krakautic said Sadie Sink is playing Jessica Rabbit in Doomsday. You know, at this point, guys, I wouldn't be surprised to see any weird ass character appear in Doomsday. I really wouldn't. We've got Silhouetted Animator, longtime friend of the channel, gave us $5, has a great point right here. Iron Man Armored Adventures had an episode where young Iron Man met young Jean Grey, who at the end of the episode was recruited by Charles Xavier. Nothing new under the sun. I don't know if she's recruited by the school at the end of this movie, but I definitely think we know she's out there and that post-Secret Wars, I keep thinking about the X-Men post-Secret Wars and I'm like, well, they've already met the X-Men. So are they all going to lose their memories? So when she shows up, are people going to be like, oh yeah, we knew a Jean Grey before. Like she was part of this whole thing. And Low Potty gave us $10. Thank you so much for that. Anyone notice the Iron Maiden reference? Water, water everywhere from the song, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner in Spider-Man Noir. I didn't catch that. Did you?
No. I'll have to go back and check it out.
I had to watch that show kind of as a speed run because I wasn't sure what we got screeners for it. And I wasn't sure like what our coverage would be. So I was like, well, I mean, they're dropping one day. Do we do like a big thing? So we ended up just doing like a quick review and ending explained. I love it. I think it's great. In fact, I'm on a podcast called Secret Friends Unite, came out today. I need to tweet about this later where you can listen to me and Charlie talk about it. No, I didn't catch it. That's pretty great. And Silhouetted Animator gave us another $5 and said, apologies about the hex code mix-up like in the previous stream. That was my bad for trusting an MCU's fan page. Tweet immediately over the facts. So in our last stream, we talked about the hex code of the green color for the Russo Brothers tease. And apparently we didn't verify the information, which is super easy to do. You just load it into Photoshop and go to the hex code. Apparently that was wrong and we were chastised in the comments. It's probably the first time anyone on the internet was wrong about something.
That's crazy.
So it's pretty monumental for humanity that we were a part of that.
We had a good run.
We had a good run. We had a good run. It's all over now.
We did. Or the internet as a whole, I think.
The internet. This is it. It's over now.
We're locking it down. Hang on a second. Sorry about that. I had to fix my mic and it wouldn't make noise. Krakautic gave us another $10 and said, what if it's a smokescreen? Because we know that Sadie is in it, but at the end credits, it's revealed that Sadie Sink is a comic accurate black cat. I just think you do black cat. I don't know. Like, I don't know why that's a secret. I'd love to see Felicia Hardy in these movies. This is like the one window, I think, when she could be an effective character in these films. Unless at the end of this movie, maybe when MJ finds out who Peter was and she remembers everything, she's so mad at him for not finding her that she breaks up with him.
Mm.
The way it works is if it is part of the plot of the movie that we don't know who she is, because Peter Parker mm-hmm. doesn't know who she is as well. And I don't know what that means necessarily for the plot, but if it is just everything is how it is, and at the end she's like, by the way, I'm Jean Grey, that's just an Easter egg. That's a tease for future movies. Instead, I don't know. There's a way of doing that where it is like the secret is part and parcel with what they're actually trying to build out of the movie. And I don't know, again, what that means or how that holds together necessarily, but it could say something about Peter's secret identity. We know, I'm just sort of like top of minding here, but we know that he is trying to be Spider-Man full time. Nobody knows who Peter Parker is. So if there's another character who nobody knows where there is, maybe there's some sort of parallel there, but again, it doesn't quite fit together for me.
I'm not sure either. Black Cat, I just think if they're going to do it, they would do it, and it wouldn't be a secret. Mm-hmm. And they, it's one of many things that's getting us talking about this movie. Jordan Framing gave us $2 and said, I really want to see Squirrel Girl in the MCU, which would be great. Tommy, did I just cut you off? I'm sorry.
No. I was just agreeing. I was nodding my head and fervently agreeing.
We have that New Warriors show that never got done with, what is it, Melina Weintraub?
Yes, Melina Weintraub.
Squirrel Girl. Real bummer.
She would have been great. She still could be. She's great, and she has a really small part in Hail Mary, too.
Mm-hmm.
That when you watch, you're like, is that Lily? That's Lily. And she's just great anyways. A lot of people had Anna Kendrick as their Squirrel Girl fan cast. If you guys are listening or watching and you don't know who Squirrel Girl is, basic great character. Her superpower is just like being really chill and getting people to agree. Like, she convinces Galactus to not eat planets at one point, if I remember right. She would be a great I kind of see her as an animated character, because then it broadens the number of characters she can interact with. Silhouetted Animator gave us another $10, thanks so much, and said, do you think your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man exists as a rights around for the MCU Spider-Man to tell an alternate history that will be the MCU Spidey's new history post-Secret Wars? No, I doubt it, because I don't think they would be like, okay, now you know the movies you've seen, they don't count. You got to watch the animated show. I just think it's a great show, and that really talented people wanted to tell the story, personally.
I agree.
Yeah. Agreed.
However, I wouldn't mind if they took elements of it. Like, if they were to take, again, I kind of hope everybody just goes into post-Secret Wars and doesn't remember the multiverse. Because I want Norman Osborn in the MCU. I don't want Peter to be like, oh, I fought him before. This guy's different, you know, because then I don't know. I just would rather see these characters introduced. Okay, gang, I think we got to wrap it up there. This has been ever so much fun going through these reveals with you guys. And thanks to everybody who dropped a super chat and a comment. Really appreciate it. And of course, you know, you can find us on all podcast platforms, Screen Crush Rewind. We upload usually same day or next day, and join a Screen Crush membership and buy from our merch store. Oh, shit, Tommy.
Oh, I got to get back to that menu. I've found the clues in the Doom Coffee menu, and I'm ready to present them.
Okay, good. We'll do that on our next broadcast. Thanks so much, broadcast. What am I from the 1940s? On our next broadcast, stay tuned. We'll reveal the Dr. Doom Coffee Shop news. Stay here for Screen Crush. Like, subscribe. Thanks, Tommy. And Alex, we can find you on the Comic Book Club podcast. You got anything else coming up you want to tell us about?
I can plug that next Tuesday at 7 p.m. on our live show, we're going to have Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, who are the writers behind Supergirl Survive, the new Elseworlds book from DC. So we're going to be talking about that. It's a very fun comic, and they have a bunch of other fun stuff. So that'll be on the Comic Book Club channel. So come hang out.
Channel linked below. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. And guys, this has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the Empire Magazine article. I hope all of you guys did too. And let us know. Keep it going in the regular comments down below what you think about the reveals, what you think is going to be in the next Spider-Man trailer, which is anticipated to arrive in just 13 days. Start that counter now. And let us know down below. We're in our free-to-join Discord server. And if it's your first time here, please subscribe. Smash that bell for alerts. For Screen Crush, I'm Ryan Aaron.